You're listening to The V-Spot, your vulnerable space to grow. This podcast is designed to give you reflective time to engage yourself around sensitive life topics for the purpose of offering manageable perspectives for your daily journey.
Hey, it's The V-Spot, your vulnerable space to grow. I'm Vessel.
And I'm Camille Veronica.
And it is Tuesday. Welcome into your Tuesday. Beautiful, beautiful week. Regardless, wherever you are, it is an absolute blessing to be able to experience this particular moment in your life. So please, please enjoy it. How are you doing?
I am breathing and grateful. Thank you very much. And yourself?
I am doing that as well. Great. Really being a responsible person for my peace.
Do I dare ask if you would just share a little bit of that?
My peace?
The responsible part.
Oh, the responsible, being responsible for my peace. So that means that I am really being on guard for how I insert myself in certain spaces, where I go, what I do that might cause me to feel a loss of peace, right? So being responsible for it means like, okay, I know you're here with me. I love having you here with me, and I'm going to be very, very, very protective of you. And so what that transpires into being in order to protect that varies depending on the circumstance, but it all comes about with no, you can't have that. No, I can't let that go. And it's been good. It's been working.
Excellent.
Yep, it's been working.
I'm proud of you.
I am proud of me. I am proud of me as well. So thank you. Thank you for joining. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. And it's, like I said, it's working.
it's an excellent segue into today's topic, which the topic is kind of broad. So if we happen to whittle it down, that's okay as well. But the topic is on mental health and our Black men.
Oh, I love it.
Yes.
I saw a book this over the week, and I can't remember the author, but I do remember that the author was a former football player, NFL professional football player. He wrote this book. It was Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. Or Uncomfortable Conversation About a Black Man. And I started reading just a little tidbit of the book. And it talked, of course, about the mental, health of Black men. Right. So, yeah, this is good. Yeah. And how do women play a role in helping with that, right, of the mental health of a Black man, you know, how women play a part in that, in assisting, as well as vice versa, how men play a part in women being able to look after their mental health. Well, I will tell you, from a man, someone who you've heard me say multiple times on the podcast, I've been intentional about how I manage my peace and how I manage my emotions and the trauma that I experience. And that all came out of me wanting to at least try to be of better health, mental health, when it came to decisions that I made. The Black aspect of it comes in as to always remember that the scenario differs from person to person, and not because always of the experience, but most often it's because of the complexion that you have a different experience. My counterparts may walk through a grocery store or a designer luxury brand store, and they'll walk in that store and they have no thought about being followed. Right. They have no thought about eyes being on them, you know, whereas if I were to go in those same spaces at the same time, I would be treated differently. And so the mental response, or how I control or assist my mental understanding of that situation, is important. Yeah. It's very important for me. What brought this topic up? What was it that you have a young man and you have a husband? You have a
brother. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What brought mm-hmm.
I think a series of events, both just my own curiosity about, you know, how we manage in spaces. Also the idea that we are not over this virus yet, and it has placed a lot of us in isolated spaces. You know, there are those who pretty much are functioning just within uncertainty. And then when you add that to what was already going on for Black folks in general and men specifically, then also just the idea, I wonder and maybe slash worry about when and where we allow ourselves not only to be vulnerable, but we remove some of the stuff that just doesn't serve us any purpose,
mm-hmm.
and begin to really feel what we feel. I mean, I think Black people in general, and very specifically men, are definitely conditioned to numb their feelings. Mm-hmm. And so just over the past few, I'd say over the past few weeks, probably, I've been thinking more and more about it, and just, you know, my own readings and things like, just kind of thinking like, when do we make it okay not to be okay? And then how do we help each other to be okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. Without it being like, oh, that's a white thing. Or, I mean, some stuff uh-huh. comes up and it does seem very white, you know, but when we're talking about real trauma, and that's not to say that white people can't have real trauma. I'm saying that the what we deal with every day, that it's heavy, yeah. You know, it doesn't lighten up, you know, that, as a parent, worrying about, is this the day that my son gets pulled over? You know, is this the day that somebody mistakenly thinks he is, you know, not who he is? You know, like, you don't want to live like that, but you can't bury that either. And so that's the kind of, for me, where this comes from, is just learn and wanting to see us take more responsibility for what we can do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the systems are going to be there. But it reminds me a lot of when my mother was teaching, and I was then considering going into the profession of teaching as well. And my one thing was like, but I don't want anybody to tell me what I do in my classroom. And she said, you know, like, once you are in your classroom, it literally is your space.
That's your space. Yep.
To create and mold and teach and share house. And learn. Yep. Right. Right. And she said, and so hopefully you have a supportive, you know, staff, yeah, administration that will, mm-hmm. will, you know, nurture that. And, you know, through her career, that's what she had. And so my mother was able to drop Bible verses on kids and they didn't even know. I had her as a teacher. I didn't know she was saying the Bible. When she would say, well, you know, you say something wasn't fair. And she said, well, the rain falls on the just and the unjust.
Yeah.
I was like, I didn't even know that was in the Bible. But she was throwing out Bible gems. You couldn't tell my mother that God wasn't allowed in the classroom.
Uh-huh.
She had a way of doing that and teaching at the same time. So I think that same thing for when we start talking about our health and specifically our mental health, right. And even more specifically, the mental health of our men. You know, many of us did not grow up in an environment where men were sitting around talking about their feelings.
No.
But we also grew up where we knew of families where there was huge abuse.
Yeah. Or we did hear them talking about it, but not in a healthy way.
Right.
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 You know, so we did see it and hear it, you know, in screaming matches. We saw it, you know, in physical response. We may have heard about it, you know, through news on the television, you know? Mm-hmm. And so the healthy aspect of it in the mental health space is essential, right? And I think mm-hmm. we press the issue about physical health so much in schools, right? You had the right. physical fitness tests. You know, that was mm-hmm. a national campaign. That was a national campaign where you had so many, you know, I never forget it because I actually had scored so high that Ronald Reagan, during his time going to St. Louis, he came to the school and gave mm-hmm. out us these presidential awards, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. got out all these awards and, you know, presidential awards from this physical fitness test. Mm-hmm. And perhaps that's what our nation needs to look at, a literal campaign around mental health and the importance mm-hmm. of putting that in place. You know, I'm always going to advocate for naps. I think mm-hmm. that was the one element they should have never allowed us to get rid of in school, especially in any aspect of learning, because it really is a reboot for the mind. That's one of the mm-hmm. few things we can do to reboot the mind, to give mind a rest. You know, you close your eyes just for 15 minutes, and that makes a world of difference at processing. So I think one of the things that we as Black men must do as we curl the barbells, right, as we lift the 150 pounds, we must think to ourselves that just like you want to do your upper body one day, your lower body another day, what day are you giving to your mental, right? Mm-hmm. So I recommend, and this is something that I don't do, you know, in a schedule. It's not, take that back. There is something that I do mentally every day that I made intentional to do every day. And that's give myself 15 minutes before I move in the morning and mm-hmm. to drink water upon my entering into the day, you know, getting into the day. And those are physical and both mental, right? The 15 minutes of me just sitting there, acknowledging my breath, acknowledging that I'm in a new day, acknowledging that grace and mercy has been bestowed upon me, and trying not so hard to go about the agenda of the day, right? That used to be the thing. That 15 minutes, I would spend about 12 of those minutes thinking about all the litany of things that I have to get completed. And I realized that that was not serving, because then I was getting up. Oh my God. You know, I was like, oh my gosh, I start thinking that I wouldn't have enough time to complete them. Right. And so I had to reestablish in my mind what those 15 minutes were meant to do. Those 15 minutes were really given to me, or I gave those 15 minutes to my life to be able to balance, to tab out the day, you know, on the weight, you got the tape or tape, mm-hmm. you know, tape out, you know, so you put a cup, you know, now you got tape out to size, you know, to get my equilibrium balance, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's something that I've made a conscious effort of allowing myself to do. I don't wake up with an alarm. And that took time, you know, it's not something that I just happened to do. I allow my body to give myself that wake up call. And sometimes I do oversleep. I'm not going to rattle off and say I do. And then when I do have those oversleep moments, I still have to tell myself, give yourself that 15 minutes. Don't cheat that part of you, of your day, because your body needed more rest, right? Because you overslept, right? Don't cheat that 15 minutes, you know? You might have seen me recently post more openly about the books that I've been reading, mm-hmm. Black Men Read. I believe that is another way of engaging mental health, you know, exercising the brain. The brain needs those, you know, that stimulus. You know, you need to stimulate the brain. And so one way to stimulate that brain is through foods and through reading. You know, reading has been said to help offset if you have any type of Alzheimer's, you know, it's mm-hmm. been said to have some response to that, and helping the mind to remember. So those are just some things that I think about just now. And I don't even think any of what I mentioned is specifically just for Black people, mm-hmm. Black men, but certainly it is one weight that we need to add to our barbells, you know, to what we do as Black men. I want to throw one more in there, and then I'm gonna chime it over to you. The other thing I believe we can do is to acknowledge the, there's a serenity prayer, accept the things that I cannot change, and be able to understand and understand the things that I can change, and to know the difference between those two.
Mm-hmm.
Right. To me, I feel like we as Black men have taken on this, this responsibility of having to be more than,
mm-hmm.
right? More than, I have to be more than, because we've been fed that we have been birthed into a space where we are considered less than.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense, right?
Right.
And
right.
And what we end up doing, or what I've discovered that I've done sometimes, is I have to feel like I have to overcompensate. And I just can't be this man, this Black man. I have to be extra. I have to go take my driver's license, and I have to put on a shirt and tie, because when the police officer gets my ID, I want him to see a different type of Black man, right, mm-hmm. on that picture than what he's particularly seen, right? When I go to a interview, you know, I am extra attentive to how my face hair, my hair looks, you know, I'm thinking about those things as a Black man, because I believe that I have to work 10 times as hard in order to make this job see my credentials for what they are, my skill set for what it is. And I think that we need to reframe from feeling that way, you know, and the only way you can do that is know that you are more than enough, right? You are, and you have to tell yourself this. I had to tell myself, I am already worthy. I am already worthy. I was worth more than meets the eye before anybody opened up their eyes, right? I have to accept that, right? It's not that I have to work 10 times harder because I got a slow start. It's I want to work 10 times harder because I want to accomplish my goals 10 times greater, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the intent that I put in my space to help me, you know, in that area. And there are a couple other things, but yeah. Yeah, what is a woman, right? For a woman with a Black male child, how are you engaging him and your husband? How are you engaging them around mental health?
You know, it's an interesting thing. My husband comes from people who are not very verbal about the personal, you know. It's kind of like you accept the way things are. I mean, like, you not to say that they don't have arguments and stuff, but, you know, where we might be a little bit more demonstrative about, you know, like pet names and things like that. Like, that just isn't really part of his makeup, you know. And one of the things that he noticed with my parents was the way they communicated. And he was thrown off at first because he was wondering, he's like, do they discuss everything, you know? And I was like, well, my parents are like the originators of the United Front, so I guess they do, you know. And even when growing up, they didn't necessarily know what the other was doing. They throw us off by saying, oh, well, you know, you asked for something. Well, what did your mother say? You go to your mother, my mother, oh, well, what's your father saying? And you got to go back and forth, not knowing that they were really relaying back and forth, like, okay, I wasn't aware of this. Go mm-hmm. ask, you know, but they had a way of communicating like that. So when my husband saw that before we married, he was kind of like, yo, are you expecting that? Because I'm not used to that.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, though, what I did was I decided to communicate the way I communicate and not back down because he's not used to something, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. But I try to be mindful of the fact, like, there are certain things, like, I tend to answer things quickly. He tends to take more time. Okay, so then if I know I want something answered by a certain time, I give him that time, mm-hmm. enough time to think about it. And that kind of has helped in terms of communicating things. But despite that, he has always kind of shown a more vulnerable side around me, mm-hmm. you know.
What about around the son, the prince? And I think and based on how you answer this is going to follow up to what I want to.
Right. Yeah. I don't know that I would say he is as vulnerable around him, but I would like to say that he is learning to be more open around our children. Mm-hmm. Because he still comes from a very traditional concept of, you know, as a parent, you have this role to play. Your children play this role. The society around it plays this role. And so there's not a whole, like, where I tend to sit and talk to my children, like, all the time. Mm-hmm. He will talk to them, but it's never in that kind of same, let me just come in your room and hang out with you for a minute and find out what's going on. Mm-hmm. Now he will ask us, but it's not the same. You know, there's a different kind of way of communicating for him. So in terms of vulnerability, I don't know that he really has been as open with them. And yet I want to believe that my son knows that it's healthier just to let some stuff out as opposed to holding in. Mm-hmm. Yet I know he does hold some stuff in. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's just because he is his age now and all that stuff like that.
Well, he sends a bit of protection. And I think that that's the opportunity there. So that is a healing mechanism for the king to show vulnerability in areas and in times when he would rather not, right?
Right.
And allow that disappointment to be reflected in a conversation that speaks to that, right? So I'm showing you I'm disappointed. I'm not just telling, you know, I'm telling you, but I'm also letting you see what that disappointment has done to me. Right. Mm-hmm. So you might see the tear fall. You might, mm-hmm. you might experience the conversation that says, I'm beyond disappointed at why this happened. Right. Mm-hmm. Or the mental health from the positive, right? I'm elated that you have decided, you know, to have this conversation with me, you know, mm-hmm. why does it matter to me? Well, let me tell you, when I was young, you know, let mm-hmm. me share some things, you know, from my childhood. And that brings a connected bond. And I think that triggers in another person, that gives somebody else permission. That gives the princess and the prince permission mm-hmm. to say, oh, I can talk to my dad about anything. You know, I used to hear about that. You know, I can talk to my mom about anything. And you think, really? You know, like, what layers of anything are we going to be able to go into, you know?
Right. And the fact that you said that now really, like, hits for me. I remember driving back from Maryland to Michigan with my father. And this, I probably was around, it was somewhere between 16, 17 years old. And we drove back and I was doing the majority of the driving, which was, I was surprised by that. He let me do that much driving, mm-hmm. but he seemed to be comfortable. And he opened up and shared a lot about his relationship with his mother. My father's maternal birth mother, he didn't always live with her. He actually lived with his stepmother, which we never called her stepmother. She was just our grandmother. Mm-hmm. And but there was a strain in the relationship between he and his mother and he and his siblings. My father almost really kind of lived like an only child for a good portion of his life, you know. But that conversation revealed so much and allowed me to understand the dynamic that I struggled with that particular grandmother. Because once he opened up and shared with me about her manipulative nature, and this is stuff that I always sensed about her, but it's my grandmother. Mm-hmm. I'm not supposed to say stuff like that, you know. But once he said it, then I was like, okay, now this makes sense to me, you know. And it even more so when I got to, when I went away to college and came back home, and I would always go to see her, and it was never enough. You know, it would be like, if I came right from the airport, when'd you get in? I just got off the plane. Oh, you just getting here now? What? You know, and to go to her place was out of the way. It was not on the side of town. It was not on any place where I would normally be hanging out, where I'm like, I'm over here, let me go stop past and see my grandmother. It meant I had to make an effort. But hearing this conversation with him opened up a lot more and also allowed me to see him differently as well. That's why I know at about age 18, 19, that was the first I actually saw my father as a human and not a provider. Mm.
So it changed. It changed in you.
It changed.
And it also triggered some things in you too, right? Right.
And so I don't know that I can honestly say that kind of clarity is there for my children with my husband, their father. So, but I know that makes a difference. And I definitely want for our audience members, and I know we've said this before, but I think it's just so important. Men who have daughters, it is so key for you to be upfront and honest with them so that they know what the standard is. And they also know what the foolishness is. I mean, my father laid out the foolishness. He let us know, like, this is what men do and this is what boys do. Okay. You just need to know the difference between
the two.
And
they both exist. And but they will come after you.
Right. And part of the thing too is, I think what's difficult for all of us comes back to expectations that we allow ourselves to be governed by, and they're not necessarily our expectations. But you know, like the some of them are things that are imposed on us, like, you know, like you better be a man. You don't need to be crying out here. You know, right? I remember working in an environment where I was told I was too emotional, and they're like, "Well, you can't break down and cry every time." You know, and what was difficult for me was that what I was crying about was the injustice within the workplace, and we were supposed to be dealing with justice outside of the workplace. And I'm just like, somebody don't see this, that we can't be doing all this and it's okay, you know. And I'm told, well, you can't break down and cry every time, you know, no one will ever take you seriously if you're this sensitive, you know. So I'm getting that, and I'm being told, you know this is why women can't do blah blah blah. But also I know I grew up hearing boys in my neighborhood being told, you can't cry, you weak, you a sissy, you a punk, all this stuff. And never was there ever a time that I can recall that there was a place for you to put that hurt.
Yeah. Well, there is. There was, right? It was inside. There was inside.
There was, but I'm saying,
in silence. It was in a silo. Mm-hmm. It was in a brother. It was in a molested moment. It was in and that's what I think we have to get, right? That's the other component. If it's not happening for us to be healthy, then it's happening to hurt. So it's one or the other, right? If we're not exercising as Black men, there's a group called Black Men Build, and they pretty much spawn out of all that this injustice that we've been experiencing. And I'm part of that group, and we have books assigned to us in that group too. Man, I got books everywhere. In that particular group, you see the dynamic of the Black man. You see the very masculine approach type man and the very metrosexual, or you see the different dynamics, right? And you see the choice of mm-hmm. how some people choose to, or how some people respond to some of the things that come out, right? There's heated conversations in these calls that we have, and I mean heated, and name calling, mm-hmm. right? And you see that male aggression come out, and you have a few of us that are like, that's okay. Like, oh, now calm down. Mm-hmm. No, let's not calm down. Let's have that conversation. Mm-hmm. And I think we've done that a lot. We force guys when they get, when the lion gets outraged or a riot, you know, when the lion really gets to attack, you don't see the little lioness, you don't see them running. Oh, stop. No, they get their behind mm-hmm. out of the way. They move away.
Right.
In fact, they get the children. They move because they know mm-hmm. it's going down, and this is not going. And
right.
That is a necessary response sometimes that we try mm-hmm. to harness, and when you right. harness it, it builds up or it weakens, right? And you can weaken the black man. Mm-hmm. When you don't have mm-hmm. them exercise in that frustration, when you don't have them learn how to be able to manage their trauma, it can play mm-hmm. out in a number of different other ways. So, yeah, I feel like there are some really good examples that we can tag in, you know, people, you know, that you can tag in. And it doesn't always have to be a father, you know, it can be a mentor of another black mm-hmm. man that talks, you know, and is willing to share their journey, you know, healthy wise.
Right.
You know, and we've done that. We've shared journeys right. when it's coming into manhood, so I'm gonna go take you down to the strip club, or I'm gonna give you this shot of vodka, mm-hmm. you know, you gotta drink this shot, you know, put some hair in your chest. We've heard it from that perspective. But what about the others that talk about when you get that first breakup, right? When you have that first heartbreak, mm-hmm. and it's probably no different than for a woman in some spaces, because you're hurt, right? That's a common denominator. Mm-hmm. Hurt is a common denominator. But there is another element that men, I believe, gravitate to. Oh, you're not going to see me sweat again. And so the next person now mm-hmm. has to suffer at the hands of a broken heart that is literally part of the process of being the best person that you're going to become. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That sounded like we were ending, but I did want to throw in two things. One is, anyone who has access to children and is concerned for their health and their mental wellness, early on is that space where we can begin to break the cycle that we think, you know, mental wellness is nothing, or that's some white people stuff. Where you begin to teach your children how to articulate their feelings and how to express themselves, and not limit it to just talking about it. You know, some children do better to write something out. Some do better to draw something out. But allowing those different spaces so that early on they learn how to say, I feel this way. This is what, you know, this is what hurts me. Or I'm happy when this happens. As opposed to perpetuating some of these same, again, expectations that, you know, you got to man up. You acted like a girl. Those kind of things that really end up hurting mm-hmm. the psyche more mm-hmm. than anything else. And then also, whether we're talking about children or adults, preteens, whatever, rename mm-hmm. what you value. You know, rename it in a way that we can remove the expectations. You don't need a government-funded program to begin to meditate, to begin to take a nap, to begin to do yoga, whatever you need to get yourself, to keep yourself healthy or to yeah. get yourself healthy. We don't have to wait around for somebody to make a day of it or yeah. a month of it or anything like that. We can begin within our own communities, our own spaces, even with us having to utilize technology right now, we can reach out to people and find folks who, you know, look at somebody you admire and find out why is it that they're functioning the way they do in the midst of all this stuff. We can take those kind of steps to get healthier, to remain healthy, to manage trauma, to, you know, heal, to recover, to restore. We can do those kind of things. And yes, there are organizations and there are resources available and there are books and all those things. It still comes back to us taking responsibility for it. There's so much that weighs on us daily. And if we can create safe spaces in our homes, in our car, you know, someplace where you can have where you can have a safe space and be able to, you know, compress, deal with what you deal with, you know, feel what you feel and then let that go. If it doesn't serve you anymore, let it go. You know, journaling is great way, you know, take an art class or look, you ain't even got to take an art class. You go and you get you some Dollar Tree watercolors and you just paint and whatever comes out without judgment, whatever just comes out, put on some soft music or put on some rage music, whatever comes out, just comes out. But there are things that we can begin to do without anybody else having to tell us, this is the time to do this now. Okay. It's this month. Now is the time for you to take care of yourself. There are steps you can take right now. In order
to get to that type of area of our life, and I have to add that, you have to be a self-starter because, I mean, we've given you permission. We've just said you can do it, right? We've given you permission. Mm-hmm. It then takes that self-starter, that go-getter. People wait until the beginning of the year to set standards that by this end of the month, of the beginning of the new year, you haven't even started or you dropped them already. You know? And you do that because that's what's been conditioned. And so you constantly start, drop, start, drop. And I would say there's a good thing in starting. There's even a better thing when you keep going. You know, there's a great thing to start. Mm-hmm. And so absolutely, we've given you permission. I think we've given a lot of key ways that as Black men, as people in general, you can manage better your mental health and what that looks like, right? Making sound decisions, being aware of your surroundings. What does that look like? That means acknowledging the hurt and accepting the healing. You know, that's what that looks like to me, right? And it might look differently for somebody else, but it should never, that mental health and that healing, it should never be on the backs, on the tears, on the brokenness of anyone else. It should always be with love and empathy engaged on some level. That's good. This was good. I thank you for listening to the V-Spot, your vulnerable space to grow. I'm Vessel.
And I'm Camille Veronica. And we
look forward to you joining with us again on our next episode. Have a great one.
You've been listening to The V-Spot, your vulnerable space to grow with Vessel and Camille Veronica. We appreciate you listening and hope you'll follow us on social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You'll find us at The V-Spot Radio. If you want to send us an email, email us at vspotradio@gmail.com. We love to hear from you and we love your feedback. Please let us know of topics that you're interested in hearing from us. Thank you.